Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the sky.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Insider Secrets with the Functional Foodie on the Coach on Fire Network. I'm Jane Hutton, the Functional Foodie, and this show is all about great food and how to use it for achieving and maintaining vibrant health. Today, I'll be talking to Lisa Bardell Coaching. Now, she's a hypnotherapist, she's an NLP master, she does EFT, she's a meditation guru who works with an awful lot of people on an awful lot of issues, and we're going to be talking today about various kinds of eating issues that can derail you, whether it's stress or comfort, anxiety, whatever it is, if it affects your eating, and that can be eating too much, not eating enough. We're going to really have a look today at how those sort of mental processes and emotional processes can affect on your physical self. We'll also have the functional foodie focus and, of course, a fabulous recipe later to get you into the kitchen, because real food is what it's all about. To call in and ask a question, and we'd love to hear from you. If you want to join the discussion, you can call 646-716-7979. And if you'd like to find out more about functional food and my work as a functional foodie, you can jump on over to my hub site, which is at www.functional-foodie.com, and there I have tons of recipes and targeted health information and courses and membership options as well. So people really want to get stuck in. There's some fantastic membership options at the moment to access all of the content and the recipes that keep growing through the rest of the year. So what we're going to do first is have a look at our functional foodie focus for this episode. And the reason I do these is because there are various sort of things that people ask that a lot, and I get asked certain questions all the time, and I also find that particular concerns and almost things that we have in society in general that affect health on a very deep level pop up frequently. So what I want to talk about today is really that concept of symptoms versus causes. We all know that there is a difference between the symptoms of an illness and symptoms of a condition, or even a niggle, or just something that we're suffering. And we tend to go and try and tackle that rather than thinking, well, what's the root of it? What is the cause of it? Where is it coming from? And I think the perception of treating the symptoms rather than root causes is something that needs to change for any of us to be truly healthy. When we notice a niggle, and that can be something as simple as getting cramp, aches, patches of dry skin that bother us, we go to deal with those symptoms. And getting to the root cause is far more important, because that root cause could be causing a number of other symptoms, or it could get worse and develop into something a little more hard to sort out. Let's have a look at a couple of examples. I've mentioned dry skin, I've mentioned aches, I've mentioned things like cramps. So what about one of the biggest ones is indigestion? And you hear people complaining about eating antacids like there's no tomorrow, and they're throwing Gaviscon and various other proprietary brands down their throat after meals, settle their stomach, because, you know, indigestion is really uncomfortable. It can be really painful as well. It can actually be so painful it can create pain similar to heart attack. I mean, it can be really serious and really, really painful. So, well, the problem with antacids is that they can upset mineral balance. They can actually suppress your digestion and suppress all the stomach acid that's there, which means that you don't actually digest your food very well. And if you think about it, if you don't digest your food very well, you can some low absorption of particular nutrients, or just not getting everything you need. Not great, because that will then cause something else. You're going to end up with various deficiencies or other niggles, other issues that come from being deficient in nutrients or digestion. So what could be at the root of it then? What could be the cause? Well, I mean, hiatus hernias are quite common, and they're quite a big cause of people taking antacids, because they can cause reflux until they're sorted out with surgery. Nobody wants to go under the knife, but sometimes you have to weigh up what the long-term consequences of taking a medication might be, as opposed to actually getting an issue sorted out. And I have treated several clients who have quite complex issues that have been brought on by having a hiatus hernia that has not been operated on and fixed for many years. So they've been taking medications for many years and just gradually getting worse and worse. What are the reasons behind it? Well, apart from hiatus hernia, which is quite common, you can have a lack of digestive enzymes themselves, which can create indigestion. There are certain ones that are quite common regardless of age or any other reason. Things like lactate, people low in lactate have a problem with dairy products, and tend to go for lactose-free milk and dairy. Glucoamylase is one that's quite commonly low, which means people have a problem digesting beans and pulses. And that's easily fixed. You know, you don't have to go taking lots and lots of antacids to cure indigestion. You just make sure that you boost your enzyme production, or actually boost your digestion before a meal. And that can be taking, you know, a natural digestive enzyme is best. It's a broad spectrum one with made with plants. You can try apple cider vinegar in your warm water, because that will stimulate juices and enzymes, because a lot of digestion actually happens in your mouth when you chew. And mindful eating, which I'm going to discuss on another show, is a really good way to ensure that you can do that. If you have a very processed diet, you might not be getting the nutrients you actually need to create digestive enzymes themselves. So actually going back to a more whole food diet and boosting digestion is a really good way to sort that issue out. We talked about hernias, we've talked about enzymes, so what about things like inflammation? Inflammation in your gut can be caused by stress. Long-term stress can cause a lot of problems, which also come from in your gut as well. And also gut flora, if that's unbalanced, that can also create a situation where you just don't feel happy after meals, bloating and indigestion of various kinds. So if you find yourself uncomfortable after meals for any reason, don't just reach for the antacids. Actually start to think what the root cause might be and try and trace things back. Keep a food diary, a symptom diary if necessary, and go and see a nutrition professional who can help sort you out and get you in the right direction, because the last thing you want to do is take a load of antacids for a long period of time and end up causing yourself more problems than you had in the first place, because that is never good. So I hope that's helpful. We'll go on to with you next time. Now it's time to get on to our very special guest, Lisa. Lisa is a very experienced coach, as I've already said. She has worked with a number of people. She's had great success, and she's even created her own meditation technique called Shine, which I'll let her tell you about. And we together are about to launch a program on eating, comfort eating, stress eating, all these kinds of ways that your eating habits might be tied up with issues to do with emotion, whether it's restricting eating or whether that's actually eating too much. Together we're called Finding Freedom, and we're going to be launching with a webinar on Monday next week. Any details for anything to do with Finding Freedom can be found on our Facebook page at the moment, and that's Finding Freedom on Facebook. And you can see it's easy to ask, because Lisa by Valentine Hutton is there listed. And now we're going to let Lisa introduce herself. How are you today, Lisa? Thank you for joining us from London. Are you in London or are you in Cheshire today?
I'm in Cheshire today, actually, yeah. Oh. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Hi to everyone.
Perhaps you'd like to tell us a little bit about yourself just briefly, and your wealth of experience and qualifications and what's for you to certainly us teaching and the Shine development of Shine and how that's all going for you.
Okay, I will do. Well, where to start? In particular reference to the topics we're talking about today, this has been a long-standing area of interest and passion for me. So I studied a psychology degree many years ago, and I was particularly interested in clinical psychology at that time. And well, my thesis for that degree was connected to eating disorders and obesity. I was particularly drawn to that area, and at the time I was having my own personal struggles with body image. I think that was guiding me to be so interested in that area. And you know, then as you know, I went off and had a different career. I actually didn't become a clinical psychologist. I went off and worked in business for many years. So I had a business career, and you know, as with a lot of people, I reached a certain stage in my life when I wanted to make sort of personal changes and find more balance in my own life. I was noticing that my body was raising some red flags in terms of stress and its effects, and I decided to return to my original passion to retrain to become a therapist. And as I retrained and was starting to look at the possibilities as to who to train with, I trained with somebody, a chap named Phil Parker, who is a sort of world-renowned leader in personal development and an author. And he was training in clinical hypnotherapy and in NLP and in coaching. So I'd experienced coaching before. I'd had some training in coaching in my sort of executive career. But combining all three together, I'm really glad I made that move. And the way that he trained his students was very orientated towards the science of the mind-body connection, which has sort of since become even more of a passion. So as I became established and started my own business, I've got two locations. We've hinted at that already. So I have 2 days a week in my Cheshire clinic and 2 days a week executive coaching in my London practice in Liverpool Street. So I do see a broad range of clients, but from the outset, I was always particularly interested in working with people who were suffering with disordered eating patterns and weight issues and body image issues, as well as also clients who had full-blown eating disorders. So, yes, it's remained a passion. And as you said, I'm delighted that we're coming together on this, on the Finding Freedom project, and hopefully reaching out far and wide to help more people.
Yeah, definitely. I'm really excited because as somebody who works with helping people get their diet from the straight and narrow and actually tackle issues with food, not just about tackling physical issues, it's also about tackling physical representation of what happens when your emotions or you're upset mentally or emotionally that create that knock-on effect in what you eat, how you eat, what choices you make. And I just think it's such a powerful and transformational thing to put together the physical, the mental and the emotional to bring food people actually back into learning what food they should be eating and tackling exactly how they look at food, how they look at themselves, so that they enjoy making those really, really good choices for themselves. So it's going to be fantastic. And it's really interesting that you became interested in this field of therapy. Do you think actually being involved in the fashion industry had an impact on that?
Possibly. I'm not sure. I mean, yes, it's a very visual industry, and there's a lot of pressure on how you look. But I think before the fashion industry, I was already feeling that pressure. I was already sort of wired that way, hence my early sort of body image issues, which were fairly pervasive, actually, I have to say. And it really took me, if I'm honest, it took me until my own retraining and doing my own work on myself and using these exact sorts of processes before I fully let go of that. So I know what it's like. To experience these things for myself and to experience stress and all sorts of other aspects. So I guess it did have an influence. I think perhaps more the influence was that because that industry is so highly pressured and results driven and you're so highly accountable for your results, it really became more about the hours that I was working and the amount of travel
which ultimately became the burden, you know, which was the red flag. I really had to start looking at how I was living my life and the choices I was making and how sustainable it was or how fulfilling it was. So I think that was the ultimate push, if you like, gentle shove towards retraining. I'm certainly aware. I mean, I work with lots of people now in the fashion industry. I work with people from all sorts of walks of life. But it's very interesting now to be sort of on the other side, helping people with all the issues, you know, stress and the emotional aspects, whatever it might be that they're needing help with.
Yeah, definitely. And we all know that everybody is under pressure to look good now. I think it's become, I remember it when I was a teenager, and it must be so much worse for young people now. And I think the more that we can get the idea that restricting your diet necessarily or eating in particular ways as a result of stress or as sort of an impulse are ultimately all disordered eating, we can start to train a generation into happy with their bodies and actually making healthier choices. And there's a whole undercurrent, there's a massive movement now in getting everybody back into what food actually means, and that consumers have gone too far, media pressure has gone too far. I have two young nieces, and I'm very aware of the age that they are at 13 and 10, that they're starting, even at primary school, getting teased for various things. And you know, there's so much pressure now. So we know that everybody comes under pressure and can so easily have a disordered eating pattern without even realising. So what do you think the difference is between eating disorders? I've worked with people with eating disorders many, many times. And disordered eating, what do you think? There.
Well, I would give you my personal opinion and my professional opinion. But I'm not here to diagnose. That's not, you know, I'm not a clinical psychologist, so I'm not sort of taking on that role. But what I have noticed from working with people, I think we're all somewhere, you know, along a points along a continuum, and perhaps sort of on a little bit of a sliding scale. But what I would say, when somebody is suffering with a full blown eating disorder, that there's a very pervasive and extreme level of underlying emotional pain, which is so painful and so difficult to deal with, that the eating issue or the eating strategy, if you like, becomes a way to cope, and it becomes really the only way to cope. It's a bit like, you know, the alcoholic chooses the alcohol to cope. So it's a similar sort of cycle. And the controlling of the food or restriction of food or the binging on food or obsessing about food or overeating or whatever it might be becomes a strategy just to feel a bit better, just to cope, just to stay relatively on an even keel. And without that strategy, individuals just can't cope. So I would say there's also a more obsessive element to it as well. That's a deeper level of obsession in terms of body image type obsessions or food obsessions or intrusive and obsessive type thoughts, obsession about perhaps even nutrition, you know, even that can start to come into an eating disorder, can't it? I mean, a lot of people with eating disorders are very highly educated on food and nutrition as well.
Yeah, that's right.
So I would say there's that sort of obsessive element as well. And I would say then in disordered eating, it's really more something that comes and goes, it ebbs and flows. You know, so when we're under times of stress or challenge or pressure, we might notice it more. And when we are relaxed and happy, we might notice it less. So it's, you know, it's similar. We're using a food strategy or an eating strategy to help us to feel better or to avoid some sort of emotion. But it's not so pervasive. And obviously it's much easier to work with. So I think if anybody feels that they have a full-blown eating disorder, I would strongly suggest working one-to-one with a practitioner on a one-to-one basis. Whereas I think for disordered eating, there's lots that can be done through programs and the use of techniques and empowering people and educating people.
Yeah, so do you think sometimes, and I've wondered this, I've had particular clients who are very convinced that they should be cutting out this and cutting out that, and they should follow that fad, and they mustn't eat this and mustn't eat that. Mm. Sometimes it actually becomes very, very obsessional. And you start to think, what, you know, what Why are you restricting yourself? What is it really? Is this about a sense of control? Is this,
yes.
This is about more than just trying to be healthy. And that's where you can tip over that fine line into what
exactly.
actually we call disordered eating, because it's not healthy in some respects. And
exactly.
I've had coaching clients who can become obsessed about the amount of weight that they're losing to the point
yes.
where they can beat themselves up on a daily basis. They've only lost a tiny amount of weight, when it's all about being healthier and about the overview. Even when they've
yeah.
actually
yeah.
lost quite a lot overall, it's all, I've only lost X amount today. And that in itself is a coaching challenge, isn't it? To bring people back.
It is.
And
yeah, totally.
Realize
totally.
That this is a control.
Because, yeah, I mean, we could almost have a very unhealthy relationship with healthy eating if we become obsessive. And, you know, we could become obsessive about anything. It's that obsessive element which becomes the most destructive rather than what we're obsessing about.
Definitely. And while we're on the subject here, let me just jump in again, remind people of the phone number. If they want to join this discussion, if they have anything that they'd like to contribute to this, we would love to hear from you. That's 646-716-7979. Obviously, that's a number for our US listeners. I will be getting my head at some point around the chat box, so listeners in the UK will be able to join in through chat. But, you know, one step at a time on the technology here. Oh, my disordered technology. But never mind, we'll get there at the end. So one of the other things I was wondering is, what you think is the biggest cause of emotional eating in your clients? Because, I mean, I coach and I see people with issues with emotional eating, and they're trying to sort out by getting back to real food, by actually having a diet plan and the food they need to eat, and actually being told what to have, what portions to have, and this kind of thing, which is sort of what I do.
What
do you think is the biggest cause of emotional eating that you see for how you tackle it with your clients?
Well, I'd say the biggest cause, and this is not just to do with emotional eating, it's to do with most issues
most
that people will come and see me
for
help with. Stress.
Yeah.
Stress is something that it's just a little word, and we use it a lot, and sometimes we overuse it. Sometimes we sort of wear it like a badge of honor to be stressed, sort of validates our place in the world. But actually, you know, it has a really insidious and toxic effect, and our brain becomes wired up in a really unproductive, unhelpful, unsupportive way. And until we sort of do some work or take on some processes or techniques to change that, you know, the way that our inner wiring works is totally against us, you know. So if you think of the results of stress, and I'm just going to actually maybe even just talk about the brain here, because it just think really helps to illustrate to people how they might arrive at this point. But stress actually affects your fight or flight center in your brain. So as we become stressed, and the way we become stressed for the modern human is through our thoughts. You know, it's not like the old-fashioned stress response for the ancient human, where we were just literally trying to get out of the way of a wild, hungry tiger. We are thinking ourselves into stress and thinking ourselves into threat of some sort through our thoughts all the time, which is why it's a chronic condition that's happening all the time, because we can't stop that thinking. But as we do that and we become chronically stressed, the fight or flight center is called the amygdala, and that actually grows. So it's a part of our brain that grows and becomes even more efficient and even more genius at getting us triggered and bothered and stressed out. And you know, when we call it fight or flight, it's not just fear that it triggers. You know, it can trigger fear, but it can also trigger sadness, loneliness, guilt, shame, frustration, anger. So if our amygdala has grown and it has become genius at getting us stressed out, we're going to be experiencing strong emotions and getting triggered into strong emotions. And therefore, those strong emotions become the very thing that we want to comfort ourselves or soothe ourselves out of, or avoid or distract ourselves from. So I think that's the first point. And when I heard about that and I heard about the amygdala, I found it quite empowering, because actually you realize, because our brains are plastic, because of this process that we call neuroplasticity, we can change all this, you know.
Exactly.
Our brains are not just a genetically predetermined lump of matter, you know. They are plastic, and the processes that we use in coaching and therapy, and the processes that we're going to be introducing through the Finding Freedom program, all help with this natural plasticity. So I'd firstly say just bring people's awareness to that, the amygdala, but secondly also another area of the brain that gets affected in the opposite way and that it shrinks down. It's called the hippocampus. The hippocampus is connected to memory and new learning. So, you know, often people find when they're stressed that they can't remember very much. That was one of my major symptoms, I have to say. I thought I'd got early onset dementia.
Recognise that one.
So it's a really familiar one for lots of people, but they don't really know why. But not only is it to do with memory and recall, which, you know, we are sort of familiar with, that resonates with a lot of people. It's also to do with the formation of new positive memories. And it's very symptomatic in depression and low mood, where we start to put a negative spin on things and start to get locked into patterns of negative thinking. Because cortisol, which is one of the stress hormones, causes that area of the brain to atrophy. So the sort of neural connections start to die off. And again, fortunately, because of neural plasticity, we can build these areas back up again. But also, as you know, I mean, you've probably explained the science on this before in previous interactions with people. But stress and the stress chemistry inside of our bodies really directly affects our appetite, what we want to eat, cravings, when we want to eat, or, you know, and we don't crave salad and carrots, do we? I don't know anyone who craves salad and carrots.
You know, sometimes I do crave very healthy food, but and sometimes it's in times of real pressure and stress, as you get, you know, as you often do when you're running your own business and you're working very hard for people and you've got juggling lots of things, and you've got lots you want to do, looking after family and everything else, you're going to think, oh, I'd kill for miso broth right now. I can generally what I call temple comfort food. You know, when it's something exactly. You really want to nourish yourself. But no, yeah. I tell you, when I start to crave a gin and tonic or a big sized slice of cake, I know that I'm working too hard.
Exactly. Yeah. So cravings classically are so the really high calorie, low nutrient sorts of foods. You know, high sugar and high fat. So. And then, of course, what happens is people then beat themselves up about that, don't they? So it just sort of locks us into these negative cycles and affects our digestion and assimilation and sorts of things you were talking about before. So we start to fall into bad habits. And then another part of our brain gets affected, prefrontal cortex, the area behind the forehead, which is very much connected to our future-focused, our goal-orientated behaviour and our willpower. Once that starts to erode, once again, it can be built back up again. So that's the good news. But once that starts to erode as a result of stress, we become less able to stay on track with the I will, you know, well, I will do this and I will carry on doing that and I will do that again and I will get up and do that and I will go there. And we become much more distracted and much more attracted to short-term rewards. So we've become less able to postpone pleasure. So all of these areas of the brain have massive impact on our experience, our emotional experience, our mental experience and our physical experience, and lead us down the path of emotional eating or some sort of disordered eating. So I would say that is the biggest cause, and resolving it is, you know, the biggest breakthrough.
Definitely. So what emotions do you think your clients actually experiencing most, which lead them to use food as comfort or avoid certain foods? Because I know even myself, it can be if I'm really frustrated or fed up or tired that I want something that's going to make me feel better. Luckily, I have many, many healthy options. Like I said, like the miso broth or something really like sushi or something. And when I, it's like food is a pleasure to me. People think if you're a nutritionist, it's all about, you know, this is good and that's bad. And it's not for me. It's all about real food and food being a pleasure. And we should enjoy our food and it nourishes. Whatever we eat actually does us good in some way. For me, if I'm tired, I'm fed up, or I'm really annoyed, I can just think, oh, even I use food to cheer myself. So think about those really negative emotions, or do you think there's other emotions? What do you see most in your clients that make them use food as comfort or actually avoid?
Well, just back to stress for a moment, feeling stressed and the tiredness which stress causes and feeling overwhelmed is a major one that people are aware of, that they can actually sort of, you know, point a finger to. But some of the others are more sort of underlying. Sometimes people, unless they've done a little bit of work on themselves, they're not actually consciously aware of what it is But once you start to uncover the layers, it can be fear, it can be sadness, it can be loneliness, it can be guilt, it can be shame. But as I said, a lot of them are often operating at rather a subconscious level. Not, you know, people aren't always saying, well, I feel really guilty, so therefore I'm going to turn to the chocolate. Sometimes so, but often not so. But, you know, there will always be some underlying emotional root cause to any of our habits, which are there designed to help us to soothe or comfort or avoid emotion. So, yeah, it can be a whole variety. It really depends on the individual, really, and what's going on for them, or what their patterns are, you know, what their conditioning has been over the years.
Sometimes I have seen with clients there's a desire to punish themselves in some way. Not just reward themselves, but to punish themselves in some way.
Absolutely, yeah, there's that too. Because actually, underneath, you know, I'm talking about what's happening subconsciously. When we go underneath the emotion and we go to the level of belief, that's what we work at a therapeutic level. It's really the beliefs which are driving those emotions, which are driving the need to soothe or punish or avoid or whatever. And the beliefs, and this is not a comprehensive list, but, you know, they could be something like, I'm not good enough, I'm not attractive enough, I'm a bad person, I'm worthless, I'm not lovable, I'm all alone, the world's a dangerous place. Those are the sorts of beliefs, you know, we're all carrying those around to a degree, but it's just how much influence they have over us and our daily routines, which varies from person to person. But yes, it's, you know, it's usually those, when we go down to a belief level, it's those sorts of quite pervasive subconscious beliefs which are actually causing the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And beliefs can form from so many experiences, can't they, all the way back even in childhood.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's we're so open to the seedlings of beliefs being sown at that early age, and there's various different reasons for that. So most of our programming, to use such a word, which, you know, really is sort of what goes on, most of what we're taking on that then become our core beliefs that can be positive or can be limiting as we grow up, happen when we're much younger, because we're in a different brainwave state for a start. So we're in what we call a hypnagogic state, where our brainwave frequencies are much slower. And we're much less into the sort of mental, analytical, rational processing stage of life. So, you know, our intellect hasn't sort of formed to that level. Therefore, we're much more malleable, open and receptive, and much more present, if you like. So we're just absorbing in more fully all through our senses. So those beliefs can come from big events or small events, or just a general atmosphere, or from language, or from things that were said over and over, things that we heard, tones of voice. You know, it can come from all sorts of things, but we are all, those seedlings of beliefs are all being sown for all of us. It's that's just sort of the way it works. You know, but our basic human needs of feeling safe and secure and connected, somehow when we're younger, we're not aware of it, can sometimes come under threat, even from a fairly innocuous incident, you know, that doesn't, people wouldn't think, well, that's a trauma, or how would that affect you? It just does sometimes. It just does. It just depends on the timing and depends on the lead up. And that's how we form these beliefs.
And I've certainly seen people who have become very brought up in unhealthy habits and almost form some belief through just a life change, as simple as getting married, having children, and becoming incredibly busy. So their self-care goes out of the window. They don't feel they have the time. And I've seen ladies and coach ladies who cook the most amazing meals for their family, but they don't do it for themselves. They don't have any history of this. It has almost come from when they had to subliminate themselves as mothers or wives. And that, I think, is another issue altogether, isn't it? Especially if you're working as well. I expect you see some of that in your practice.
Yes, a lot, definitely. I mean, it's very, very, very common for people, for women especially, in that role of the nurturer, to be expert at taking care of everybody else and putting everybody else's needs at the top of the list, but they end up at the bottom of the list, you know. And as we say, you can't serve others from an empty cup. You know, we have to start to reevaluate and start to value ourselves so that we do fill ourselves up as well, and that we do feel worthy of that routine of self-care. Because a lot of the time the self-care doesn't happen because, going back to the belief, that those underlying beliefs that underpin it all is that we're undeserving or unworthy of that level of self-care.
Absolutely, yeah. We've all been there, haven't we? Definitely putting the family and other people first. I know I tend to put myself, I used to put myself last on the list a lot more than I do now, partly because you can't continue to work at that level and to do everything without giving yourself a break, without looking after yourself. So, it's all about a break. It's all about nature. It's all about really healthy food. I mean, even healthier food, actually, not just real food, which could be something like my perennial, get some sort of kale and some mushrooms bound together with some creme fraiche on some sourdough, and it's a fantastic meal. It's very quick and easy. That's real food. But then you turn to your special comfort food, particularly Japanese mainly for me at the moment, so I don't make it hungry thinking about it.
Really?
Let me remind people once again of the number they can call in on it, 646-716-7979, and fire any questions they want to at Lisa while we've still got her here. So let's get on to perhaps the resolutions that you yourself design and put in place, because you work with a lot of people, as you say, from a lot of different walks of life and a lot of backgrounds with a lot of different issues that probably all come down to very, very similar roots in some ways. I find many of my clients present different problems, but it actually tends to come down to very, very similar root causes. How do you work with clients on issues like these, and sort of what results do they achieve?
Well, there's always a balance, because I'm a therapist and a coach, so there's always a balance between the deeper therapeutic work, where we're going into root cause, which is essential. That's where we're starting to look at those beliefs, where did they come from, shining a light on those, forming new perspectives on them, letting some old stuff go, which is no longer relevant. Processes, the technical term for those processes is called re-imprinting, where we're sort of re-imprinting more helpful and supportive beliefs to take forward and letting the old ones go. And that's not just with emotional eating, that's really with all clients, to be honest. And then the other sort of work is the coaching work, which, although it's all called coaching really, but where we're just perhaps doing a little bit more practical type coaching, looking at some structures, a little bit of planning, looking into the future, looking at resources, and just sort of helping to strengthen the resolve, strengthen the willpower, helping through the use of specific techniques, helping people to imagine, to almost imprint that future. It's like sort of fine-tuning the antennae so that you're almost tuned into that future. It's like that future actually starts to attract you. And, you know, that there's the sorts of themes that are familiar in lots of coaching, and where we would be doing perhaps sort of brain rehearsal and looking at future events and practicing and planning for specific things. So there's usually a balance between the two. And the meditation technique would usually, I work with people on the course of 6 or 8 sessions, the meditation technique would usually be a part of that course. But I tend to introduce that perhaps halfway through the course, in terms of doing the groundwork first. So that, you know, helping people to rewire to a point where they feel a little bit more grounded and stable and actually ready to use a technique like meditation. So it depends. Yeah. It depends on the person, really. It depends on what they want. But the first port of call is always working as close to that root cause as we can get. So, you know, those first couple of sessions would be looking back to, you know, once we've got to the root cause, it's like the layers of the onion. You know, if you sort of work at the center, at the root cause, and at the core belief, a lot of those outer peripheral layers that were getting a lot of attention, actually probably are red herrings in a lot of cases, sort of fall away anyway and become less relevant. So first port of call is always to work at the emotional root cause of anything. And then the rest of it is sort of bespoke and supportive, strengthening, coaching to go with it, really, to prepare people for the future.
And the results are really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, the results in terms of emotional eating, because a lot of people come to me with weight issues, So they will come to me because they, you know, in their words, well, I want to lose weight. I want to lose X amount of pounds by, you know, so-and-so. So they'd be quite specific. And, you know, I sort of coach people through much more through the emotional aspect. We actually take most focus off the weight and off the scales and off that sort of future outcome and almost change the individual's relationship with that future outcome, because the more attached you are to the future outcome to give you some sort of good feeling, the more disempowered you are. You know, really it's about sort of empowering somebody to begin to feel good and begin to feel okay right now. Because if they're on a journey of weight loss, the weight that they might want to get to may be some point in the future, you know. So
yeah.
It's about feeling good every step of the way. And the emotional aspect and the eating pattern aspect, those sorts of habits and forming new habits, all completely underpinned by self-worth and self-value, just to refer back to what we said before, they are relatively quick and easy to resolve, you know, over sort of 4, 6, 8 sessions. What I can't predict is exactly what will happen with people's weight, you know, because that's there's a little bit of equilibrium to be struck. And as you probably know as well, just because people change their habits and are changing the way they approach things doesn't always rapidly and instantly equate to a massive change on the scale. Sometimes there's a little bit of catching up to do there. Don't know if you find that as well.
Well, I mean, definitely you find people, this is why we're bringing these things to them, isn't it? Because actually if you don't eat the right food in the right way, you won't lose weight efficiently, because you... Especially for people who have not eaten well, whether they've actually yo-yo dieted or restricted or overeaten or eaten for a long time, they've mucked up all sorts of different processes, metabolic, electrical in their body. They need to eat the right food in the right way to get back on track. And then we find people can lose weight exceptionally quickly, because even though they're eating a lot, actually, that's 5 times a day, you know, they're not restricted in any way, the body's thinking, I don't have to, you know, I know what's going on. I know what I'm eating. I can use
Exactly.
I'm using this for fuel, and this is what I need, and I'm nourished, and I can let go of all these toxins and all this weight, and I can let go of this and let go of that fat, and things seem to balance out. And I call it people's happy weight, because not everyone's meant to be size 8.
Yes, exactly.
So you reach your happy weight, the weight you were born to be, and that does change as you get older as well, I'm afraid. Us older ladies can, you know, change shape a little bit. You look at your mother, usually, if she eats well, because I've had people go, no, don't tell me about my mother. Did she eat well? Really? Well, there you go. So that doesn't count then. So there's all sorts of things wrapped up with that shape. So I know that you probably have to get off to a client in a minute. So just one last thing, and if you have to dash, don't worry.
No, it's fine. I've got 10 minutes or so.
What the single most useful tip you could give listeners is to help them with these issues?
The single most useful tip, really in line with what I've already been talking about, is learn to meditate. Because if you learn to meditate, you know, the evidence based on meditation is vast and very robust now. You know, there's lots of medics and neuroscientists have been researching meditation and how it literally rewires your brain. I mean, you know, spend a whole show talking about this, but, you know, we've got limited time. So I guess, you know, listeners will just have to trust me on this one. There's a lot of evidence out there. So everything we just talked about in terms of brain changes as a result of stress is completely, because your brain is plastic, completely reversible as a result of meditation. So your amygdala can shrink back down. So you... Stop getting so stressed out and stop getting so triggered. Even if your environment stays the same or your boss doesn't change, it's the way you relate to your environment which does change, which obviously allows you a much greater degree of emotional resilience and stability. So, and the research on that has shown that within a 6-week practice, the amygdala is shrinking. So, and the hippocampus can become connected again. So that's, again, as we said, to do with memory and recall and positive thinking and forming new positive memories. And the prefrontal cortex, which you said was to do with willpower and staying on track, begins to strengthen. So, you know, there's lots of reasons why meditation
in the way that it works within your body really does help you to properly stabilize your mood and stabilize your emotions. And once your emotions are stabilized, you of course are much, much less prone to any form of emotional eating or disordered eating. And also, it's going to be stabilizing your appetite, and it's going to be maximizing how you assimilate your nutrients and how you digest your food. And just one quick point, I don't know if anybody's interested in this in terms of weight, just back onto the topic of weight. You may have explained this to listeners before, but stress chemistry turns us into fat storage machines.
Oh, yeah. Stress.
So when we're stressed, we hold on to fat, particularly around the middle, around the adrenals. And once we become unstressed and relaxed, you know, we can lose that fat. Like you said, we can let it go. So, you know, we can learn through this sort of internal rewiring process, totally new ways of responding. So, and in fact, there's even been some studies done recently on meditation connected to eating habits and connected to weight loss and fat loss. So, and as you know, the Shine technique, which I've created, is at the heart of our collaboration, the Finding Freedom collaboration. So, but even if you don't come and learn Shine with me or join our program, then I would certainly suggest my top tip is learn to meditate. And when you've learned it, stick with it.
I would absolutely agree with that. Meditation is incredible and so, so important. And I mean, you know that mental health nutrition is a major specialism of mine to do with stress, to do with anxiety, to do with depression, but also stress is a major factor in weight loss with my clients. Absolutely. Hugely. And I say stress belly, but it's a technical term, but that is what we call it. Because, you will lay down these fat stores around your middle because your body is almost literally in that fight or flight all the time. And you're thinking, well, I'm going to need energy in a minute to run away from something. So I'm going to have to keep these energy stores because you're all constantly in that state. And very often, depending on how long you've been in that state, it can take three. But you have to conquer stress first. The meditation is massive. I think we should have you back on another show just to talk about meditation. I think that
I'd be delighted. That's my favourite subject.
Well, obviously we met, didn't we, on the Body Calm Coach training course, and you're a Mind Calm trainer as well. So it'd be really good to have a show on meditation and Mind Calm and Body Calm, which is great. Maybe we can get Andy to come in at some point. So I'll have to see.
By the way,
for those listening who don't know, is the creator of Mind Calm and Body Calm, and I fully expect Lisa to be now following in his footsteps, having created her Shine Meet, which is showing amazing results and which is a really exciting part of our program. So, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about
that.
Absolutely amazing. Hopefully, people have learned an awful lot about the brain and about exactly what disordered meat eating or eating disorders actually kind of are. And hopefully, people are going away and they're looking at their habits and thinking, "Have I got a really healthy attitude to food?" So, obviously,
and
anyone
we can help.
Sorry.
If not, we can help.
Oh, we can. Yeah. So, having a look at what we do in the program, and certainly, we do post a lot of lovely, inspiring material as we can, don't we, most days? You're very good at putting out some incredibly wonderful things to make people feel good and start to consider how they approach life.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly brightens up my day every time I see a lovely quote coming out. And we'll definitely have you back and talk about some meditation. So
thank you. It's been a pleasure. And I hope some listeners will be joining us on the webinar on Monday. That would be fab.
Yeah, I'll give them the details on that definitely. And we can have another discussion on exactly what these things actually are and give people some proper tips as well, some really structured tips on how they can get over emotional eating particularly. So I look forward to speaking then.
Good. Okay, enjoy the rest of the show. Thanks, Jane.
All right, then. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
So that was lovely, Lisa. And she knows an awful lot about the brain. She really, really does. An awful lot about meditation. So it'll be a fantastic show to have her back talking about the meditation and the benefits, the research benefits, which are indisputable now, that the research is really building up, and that meditation technique is a big part of the program. So if you are interested in attending the webinar on Monday, do hop over to the Facebook page at Finding Freedom. And the other thing, of course, to mention is now is to go into our recipe this week. So when it comes to really good nutrition, you can't beat smoothies. There's a lot of misunderstanding about smoothies. A lot of the time they are not done properly. It's just fruit and without the protein and healthy fat balance that you need to make sure that sugar is really gradually into the bloodstream. But they're a great way to really get loads of nutrients in your system very quickly, especially if you have them for breakfast. So the recipe we're going to look at today is from the Functional Foodie, my Functional Foodie Hub site. There are about 12 recipes that are there just for anybody to see. You don't have to, there is a free membership as well as the annual membership. You don't have to join either of those to see these 12 recipes. And what you've got there is a collection of simple smoothies. Now, I made one of these this morning and I had strawberries and melon, coconut yogurt and raw cacao powder, which was an absolute nutrient through the day, fantastically. And actually was a chocolate version of a pina colada in some respects. Definite aspect of pina colada in there and chocolate heaven from the raw cacao powder. So hop on over to the page at www.functional-foodie.com to have the rest. There's a couple of recipes there. And simple smoothies are literally just about chucking things in. You don't have to have recipes. You don't have to have measurements. You just have to make sure that you perhaps have a couple of portions of fruit, not too much. You have a form of protein or healthy fats. You can put spinach in there. You can put organic live yogurt in there. You can use nut milk in there. Try and stay off soy milk, but that's a discussion for another foodie focus. Maybe I'll look at that next time. And also things like avocado as well, which give you great texture. So if you've got the avocado, if you've got the nut milk or yogurt, or even things like nut milk can be quite good, that releases the sugar from the fruit very slowly and it makes the texture and the flavour fabulous. So play around. See what fruit you like best. I love putting strawberries in, I love putting melon in, mango and berries, and they are some of your best choices in terms of keeping that blood sugar stable. Certainly berries and mango are excellent. And bananas are great, but try and make sure you use them just coming off green so that they're not too full of sugar, because you don't want really sugary, starchy bananas just chucking sugar into your system. So once they start turning properly yellow, try and have them just before that when they're just coming off green, and they're perfect. Great source of prebiotics to help the gut flora flourish. And we all know how important gut flora is to your health. Again, that's so various fruits. A few old fashioned juice maybe sometimes for a little bit of contrast. You do need some liquid in a smoothie. If you don't use water or the milks, the nut milks, yogurt boosters, seeds in there, could it seem like a NutriBullet because it whizzes everything up. Milled flax is really good. And also any boosters you want, like chlorella powder or any of those kind of nutrient boosters rather than extra protein powders you don't really need, not if you're getting things like the yogurt and the nuts and the seeds. So have a go at those. And if you want some more recipes on the Blog Talk page for the show, there is a link to download a free Happy Healthy Eating resource, which is basically a framework of what a really good healthy eating looks like, and that does everything for you. So it gives you the information, gives you everything you need to know about what that day should look like. It gives you an actual meal plan, the recipes for that meal plan, and also the shopping list for that meal plan. And those recipes can kind of go on and make other meals, because in any household, if you can make something and it lasts for two or three meals, it's a great time saver, especially for the busy people. So if you follow that link, you can download one for free and enjoy the recipe for the simple smoothies. So again, just shop by. Really enjoyed talking to Lisa. I hope you enjoyed listening to her too. I hope you learned a lot. And if you need to get in touch with us, by all means, the message on Finding Freedom, or you can find me on the website or on my Facebook page at the Functional Foodie. So from
on the show after that. So lots more lovely things to come. And I wish you a really fantastic evening in the UK and afternoon if you're in the States.